That thing swelled like a tick on the back of a dog on a hot day.
Welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey of self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 88 of Rogue Startups, the post-MicroConf 2017 episode. Craig, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, man. I'm still recovering from one of our audio engineers giving me hell for literally the last week, having to work so hard on that last episode. That was.
You know, it's fucking Vegas. Everything's noisy, and it's hard to find like that perfect place where you can get like eight people to sit down and not have a ton of background noise around you. And I struggled with that the whole time I was out there, including the stuff that we're working on for the 100th episode surprise. Those of you that are listeners that got interviewed or were around conversations where I was interviewing, you'll know what that is. But I will keep the surprise in surprise mode until the surprise is surprisingly revealed.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I can't wait. No, we have some cool stuff planned for number 100, and yeah, I hope we're not patting ourselves on the back too much, but I do think it's you know, a fair accomplishment to be. We've been pretty steady every week, maybe three and a half episodes a month on average lately, and I think we're really kind of hitting our stride. So it's good, man.
Yeah, it feels good. And you know, I met a lot of podcast listeners at the conference, which was awesome. So if you're out there and you're listening and I chatted with you at MicroConf, I was so glad to hear what you guys had to say out there about the podcast. It was so cool to connect with real people in real life and hear what you thought. You know, a couple people were like launching into how much they knew about me and my business, and I'm sort of standing there going, "Hi, who are you?" I'm so confused. But that's what it's like with a podcast. You have put yourself out there and you have a lot of people that know a lot of stuff about you. And if you, you know, trigger some interest and there's engagement, they want to come up and talk to you about it, which is great. I love that. But, you know, remember that on the other side of that, we don't hear what's your story. So, you know, a little background is always helpful there. But, yeah. You know, it all worked out. So it was great talking to everybody out there in Vegas. I had a lot of great conversations, a lot of good times. Lost some money in craps, drank a lot of beer, drank a lot of crappy beer at the receptions. You know, that's still my number one beef with MicroConf, is that they always end up with cheap, shitty beer at the receptions. And that's not their fault. That's what they're given as the choice. Like, they literally say, right. You get three choices. They all suck.
Like, yeah, okay. That does suck. That's interesting, because I know that those catering businesses in the casinos make a ton of money for the hotels in general, I think. So it's not surprising that they're really kind of taking it to Rob and Mike there.
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, a Corona goes for $7. You know, you can get an entire six pack of Corona for $7 at the liquor store on a bad day.
So you hear.
Yeah. And, you know, that's like – that was the best beer of the ones that were there. You know, the others were like Bud and Coors, and I think there was Heineken. If you're a Heineken drinker, I mean, no, nothing personal. Heineken's just not my favorite. Corona's about what I can handle of those four choices that are there. But, yeah, it's weird because you go to other casinos and then they have like an entire microbrewery in a bar. Like, we walked across the street to the MGM. There were like – old Chicago level of beers on tap, or Yard House level of beers on tap. There were like 40 or 50 of them. So, and they were all awesome. Yeah.
Interesting. So yeah, overall, yeah. I didn't go, but I've heard really good things about people who went to both Growth and Starter editions. And I guess, I think first and foremost, kudos to Rob and Mike for, I think, successfully splitting the podcast, the event into two groups and try to cater to everybody while at the same time letting everybody come and not having to raise the price so much that it's you know, unreasonable for a lot of folks to go. I think they had a tough job ahead of them, and it sounds like they did a really first-class job pulling it off.
I totally agree with that, and I thought that – yeah, I only attended Growth, and I was there for one talk on the first day of Starter because I was waiting for my flight, and so I crashed Jordan's talk. But it was great. You know, the night in between, everybody was there, so there were lots of people that I got to catch up with that weren't at Growth. You know, there's just never enough time to have all the conversations that you possibly want to, regardless of which version you're attending. I think next year I might actually try to do both. I think that would actually be fun. I might even try to be like a speaker for Starter. We'll see.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to get in there and be able to do both, I would think.
Yeah, there were a lot of people that did that. So Justin Jackson did that, and Jordan Gall did that, and he was also emceeing Starter, which was great. I know there were guys that came to be speakers at Starter, like Ryan Battles, my friend that does Harpoon, and I'm trying to remember who else. Sherry was actually at both. Sherry Walling, yep. Rob's wife.
Yeah.
And she had an amazing talk at Growth, and then she refocused it for a different talk at Starter. I didn't get to hear the talk, but she did give me an idea. We were chatting about it, and each of the topics was very spot on for the right crowd. So the split allowed her to have a very focused talk, depending on where you were at in your entrepreneurial journey. So that really made for a very different conference, in my opinion. Very high quality, awesome people to talk to, good quality talks, I thought. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Specific to kind of what you were there for, I know in the last episode you and I did, you talked a lot about kind of being intentional about going for specific reasons and organizing the e-commerce dinner and everything. Did you feel like you got done what you wanted to get done at the conference for you and for Recapture?
I do. I feel like it was insanely valuable. So I had a conversation with a gentleman who might be interested in possibly purchasing the plugins. And we had a great breakfast and in-depth about WordPress businesses and where he's at and where I'm at, and just kind of, you know, getting to – I wouldn't say – we're past the getting to know each other stage because we met each other at Pressnomics over a year ago. But, you know, more of the deepening a relationship, and is this something we want to move forward with, and what makes sense, and general WordPress stuff. So that was really good. That was a great conversation. And then I got to catch up with some other friends that I hadn't done by the pool while we were hanging out on Sunday afternoon. And then we did the e-commerce dinner later in the evening. So that thing swelled like a balloon.
Yeah.
Well, actually, if I was going to tap my Midwest roots, I think I'd be like, that thing swelled like a tick on the back of a dog on a hot day. you know, something like that. That's probably how my grandpa would have described it.
Thanks for not tapping your Midwestern roots.
Yeah. It's a good thing I didn't. It did.
So how many people did you have in the end?
We had 18 in the end.
Oh,
and
nice.
I originally made the reservation for 10. Then I called them and expanded it to 12. And I was like, okay, I think we got plenty here. Didn't want to make it any more than that. So then we showed up, and then other people were like, oh, is this the e-commerce dinner? We wanted to come. Like, they didn't actually say, hey, we're coming to the e-commerce dinner. They just showed up. I'm like, oh, well, that's probably something I need to work on logistically next year, because you got to have enough seats for everybody. So we had to scramble at the last minute to get everybody seated. And it ended up kind of breaking up into two different rooms, which was okay. We still had great conversations and just met a bunch of new people that I'd never, ever talked to before. So that was super awesome. And just kind of connect with other people that are in the space, find out what they were all doing. We did this little round thing, a round robin thing around the table. Everybody just kind of described what their business was. So then after that, if you heard something that you're like, oh, wow, I really want to hear more about that, or, you know, I really want to talk to them about X, then you go over and have another conversation with them. Otherwise, you're just talking with whoever's next to you. It was great. So that was some good stuff. I think those are relationships that are going to be things that I'll probably foster over time and deepen next year and have communications with, you know, between microconfs. So that was super useful and valuable. And then, of course, you know, I had the usual stuff on the usual nightly events, opening reception on Sunday night. And then there was the joint reception on Tuesday night. Then on Monday night, there was a WordPress thing that I went to. And then I went to the drinks event that was sponsored by FE International. And when I was at those things, you know, I was specifically trying to catch up with people. You'd walk by somebody and be like, oh, I need to remember and talk to Brian about whatever he was doing last year and catch up with that. Or I need to catch up with Ryan about how Harpoon is doing, or just stuff like that. So you're constantly in this, oh crap, I need to have a conversation with that person. Oh crap, I need to have a conversation with that person. And sometimes it worked out and sometimes it didn't, you know, it's just sort of the way that it works at MicroConf. But
Yeah.
I was personally surprised that a man in his late 40s was able to stay up till 1 a.m. three nights in a row. I'm a 10 p.m. kind of guy. You get me like right around 10, 10:15, I'm like,
ready to go. Huh?
I'm entering low power mode. I'm ready to go down for the night. But yeah, so I had to adjust my sleep schedule a little bit for that with some afternoon coffee, which then threw me off when I got home. But it was great. It was good.
That's awesome. I saw the show notes, not the show notes, the notes that were taken. We'll link those up in the show notes for this episode. Sounds like Lars gave another great talk. I know his last year was one of my favorites. What was your favorite talk this year?
Oh, it's hard to nail it down to one. There were three good ones. So let me just give you a quick overview of what the talks were. So Natalie Nagel from WildBit spoke, and Russ Henneberry from – where is Russ from? I forget. He did one on content marketing. And then there was another one from Bridget from You Can Book Me, who did a story about her business and how it grew. James Kennedy did one about demos and Sales Factory. Then there were a bunch of attendee talks that happened. So Derek Reimer, Andy Baldacci, Brendan Dunn, Dave Churchville. There were some others in there. Then Rob gave a great talk about it was called 11 Years to Overnight Success and the motivation of why he got into things. So that was super cool. And why, you know, he basically was going through his evolution of what were his whys and his reasons for doing all of this and how that changed over time. And what were his deal breakers when he sold Drip and stuff like that.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah. That'd be a fun one to hear. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was really good. When the video comes out, you should definitely check that one out. Then Joanna Wiebe gave another awesome talk about specificity in your copy and a technique called zooming in to really dive deep and capture the reader's emotions, which was different than the content that she gave last year or 2 years ago and the time before that. Every time she gives a talk, I always think, okay, well, you know, what does she have to talk with that's really new here? But she always comes up with something that's not just new, but like super compelling. And yeah, she's a great speaker. I loved her talk as one of my top ones for sure. Then there was a guy this year as an e-commerce guy. This was specific he's an e-commerce expert. It's Ezra Firestone, and he owns a company called Zipify and has been doing info product marketing and Shopify space for a long time. So he had like all kinds of stuff about statistics and techniques and funnels and stuff like that he's using in e-commerce. So I was like madly taking notes. It was one of my longer note-taking sessions there. And Sherry did a talk about understanding your origins and determining your future. It was definitely the most touchy-feely of all the talks there. But it also kind of riffed a little bit with Rob's, where Rob was talking about his motivations and Sherry was talking about understanding how your history has sort of shaped you, and but it doesn't like completely define you, and you shouldn't just let your childhood, for example, say, okay, well, I can't do this because I couldn't do this as a child. You know, that's mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. And just how to make better decisions and how founders' brains are wired a lot like parents' brains are wired to their kids, and how founders kind of think of their company like their kid.
Yeah.
Like they've done functional MRIs on this. It's not just, you know, oh, it sounds like that, or they talk like that. They have scientific evidence that says, yes, they do this now. But that's good and it's bad. And so she went over why it's good and why it's bad. So that was really cool. And then Lars wrapped up growth with how to do some inbound engines that drive huge numbers of leads every month. So he was talking about stuff that he did at Kissmetrics and stuff that he did at I Will Teach You to Be Rich, and you know how they got through optimizing their funnels to get these things up to insane levels of productivity and efficiency. Yeah, Lars, every time Lars speaks, I'm always amazed at just how much he's managed to squeeze blood from a stone. You know, you would think, oh, well, I've got this homepage and it's converting at, you know, 5% or whatever. That's good enough. Like Lars says, nope, that's not good enough. And he like keeps running A-B tests, and then he'll pump it up to like 8%. So like right there, that immediately impacts his revenue in a huge, huge way, because he's like relentless with A-B tests and taking the winner and moving on and then A-B testing that again. I mean, he is just brutal. Yeah.
And I, from what I remember of his talk last year, you know, he's done this successfully three different times in three very different areas, right? So I Will Teach You to Be Rich and Kissmetrics, and there was one other before I Will Teach You to Be Rich, I think. And that's, for me, like the sign of somebody who really knows what they're talking about is if they can do it more than once, and especially in more than one kind of niche or industry, because then you know they're really – kind of know what they're talking about. They didn't just get lucky or know e-commerce really well or something like that. Yeah, I mean, I think if I had a growth question, I would – he's the guy I would seek out and, you know, pay him money on, you know, one of those – oh, what's
like
the –
Clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he is such a no bullshit kind of guy. Like he tells it like it is, and he's blunt. So you know, he and I get along very well, since I'm very blunt as well.
Yeah,
I went out to dinner with him and Ruben Gomez and a couple of other guys, and we had discussions about strategies that we were doing and just kind of catching up. But yeah, throw things out there, and he'd be like, nope, don't like that, and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, there's, you know exactly where you stand with Lars. He's a great guy to talk to. I had a good time with him.
Nice. So I have to ask. So talking a lot about e-commerce and taking a lot of notes from Ezra's talk, with respect to recapture, how much do you feel like you need to understand e-commerce better to kind of further that product? Like, is it more you knowing more e-commerce, or you kind of doing all the things that you need to with SaaS and optimizing that and, you know, segmenting your lists and doing email marketing and outbound and in-app messaging and all that kind of stuff, churn reduction and all that kind of stuff that you do for SaaS. Where do you think your low-hanging fruit lies?
Well,
or is that not a fair question? It's possible.
No, I think it's a fair question. But, you know, as I get deeper into it, it's like, there's really – there's two separate questions there. What do I think will further the recapture platform better? And I think it's SaaS techniques and SaaS marketing and stuff like that. So driving cold email leads, optimization of my onboarding experience, autoresponder series, you know, stuff that we've been doing for years on the plugins. But understanding my customers means I have to understand their stores. I have to understand what they live. I have to understand their platforms. I have to understand what the competitors look like. And all of that stuff is really e-commerce-y. So in order for me to really get inside the customer's head, I really do need to understand more about what does that landscape look like? Who are the competitors out there? What are they good at? What are they not good at? What are the, you know, pluses and minuses of all of those things? What do they struggle with in their stores? You know, when I was starting to dig into recapture, I dug up all of these statistics on abandoned carts and the Baymard Institute, which is like this usability study specifically around e-commerce. And they collect all of this data every year and then publish out reports. It's kind of like the Forrester Research Group for e-commerce, or the Gartner Group for e-commerce, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just digesting all of that stuff and kind of understanding what that looks like when you're a store and trying to put that into a form. So it's basically about the difference between a technique and the content that goes with that technique. So I'll give you a perfect example. Autoresponders, I know how to write an autoresponder because of the plugins. Been doing that for a long time at this point. Started doing the same thing with Support Vine, know what that series looks like, know how to deliver the value, the segues, all of that stuff. The content, though, is something that I really have to deeply understand what the audience is struggling with and how I can, A, present myself as an expert, B, position myself as the guy that has the solution, and that B, that I truly understand their problem. Not just that I'm quoting a bunch of statistics and I sound smart, but that I actually am quoting the statistics that matter to them, and I'm putting their problem in a, you know, I'm phrasing it in a way that makes it sound like, yes, I understand this. Yes, I know how to fix this. And yes, I can help you get it done.
Yeah.
So, you know, knowing an autoresponder doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to write good content. So you really have to do both. And I think, you know, the parts where I've been slowing down or struggling lately is trying to get that content and hone it, not to a perfection level, but just to a point where I feel like I have a coherent message and it kind of makes sense. So that's the thing that I think talking with other e-commerce guys makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I would go and was having a conversation with Joanna when we were standing in line for lunch about copy and how to make things better and stuff like that. The specificity and the zooming technique that she brought up isn't a whole lot different than the pain dream fix that Amy Hoy talks about in Sales Safari.
Sure, yeah.
But it's the way that she explains how to do it really the actual technique is slightly different than the way Amy Hoy talks about it. Just trying to tell them something, bring up an emotional connection to it, and then tell them to it again. Whereas Amy Hoy would just sort of be like, skip the telling stuff in the middle and just go straight for the emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, you know, you're driving the message home. So there's sort of a philosophical difference between those two. But knowing that piece of it there still doesn't give me like, how can I emotionally connect with people in e-commerce? Whereas when I was talking with guys like at the e-commerce dinner, finding out what things that they were working on and where they were having problems. And like, so, you know, you had that episode with Chad Deshawn, for example. And, you know, I got to actually talk with him about the board game tables and how he's doing that and what things are weird about it and how he's struggling and how he's unique in that space. And so to hear it kind of from a store perspective was super cool. And then there was Dave Rausch, who does tires and rims online. And he's a guy that went to Big Snow Tiny Conf East a couple of years.
Yeah.
And he runs this whole business specifically around just tires and rims. And he's got this whole process. And so I talked to him about abandoned cart emails and how he sends things and when he sends things and does he use discounts and so and so. And hearing how he sort of thought about those things and why he does or doesn't do certain techniques on here was fascinating, because I didn't really see it from his perspective until I understood how he walks through that process, how his customers think, how he keeps them engaged without just, you know, throwing out here's a 30% off coupon. Like, he just doesn't do that.
Right. Right.
So
no, that's interesting. You know, I think that's, you know, looking at buying anything, I think the big hesitation for me is always, do you really understand the business and like what your tool does? And then do you understand the industry? And I think that you understand the business, which is SaaS and email and things like that, and understand the industry lets you really write good copy and things like you're learning right now. And I think that's probably, I would guess, I'm probably putting your words in your mouth, probably something you didn't quite expect, 5 months ago now when you bought it, that there would be this kind of learning curve, huh?
You know, I kind of did expect there would be this kind of a learning curve, because I felt that already with the WordPress plugins. When I bought them, you know, I could barely log into my own WordPress admin dashboard at that point.
Okay.
and I had to sort of dig from scratch. But I felt like at least this time I knew more of what I was getting into from the standpoint of I knew that I had a lot to learn. In the WordPress, I thought, oh, well, this, how hard could this really be? Mm. But it was really hard. It turned out to be super hard. And I felt like, okay, I know that this is going to be hard, but I at least have people I can connect with, people I can ask questions of, you know, places I know that I can go look this stuff up, podcasts I can listen to. Like, I just have, was better prepared for all of the resources I could go out and use at that time. Whereas with WordPress, I kind of went, huh, WordPress, that sounds kind of cool.
Right, right. Okay. So more, yeah. Probably just an overall more informed buyer and operator now than you were, whatever, 5 or 10 years ago.
Yeah. And, no. You know, given the magnitude of difference between the prices that I paid for the two, it was like 100x difference. So, yeah, I mean, it's a different mindset. You kind of think about it very differently where, you know, I only paid a very small amount for the plugins and I'm like, I'll just wing it. Fuck it. but I was not going to go into this one and be like, e-commerce, fuck it, I'll just wing it. No.
Right.
My wife was not going to sign off on the loan knowing that.
Yeah. Interesting. So I wonder how so there was, getting back to MicroConf a little bit, there was the crossover day where you guys had a reception all together.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. How was that? I think they were very smart to have that so that there was a little bit of that cross-pollination between the two groups of people.
It was good. You know, what was kind of interesting about it is that – so I had already been out on two nights prior to that, or three if you count the Saturday I was in, but that was smaller groups, where I was out having conversations with other people at Growth. So all of us that were at Growth – kind of knew who to talk to and were having conversations and maybe catching up on people you hadn't chatted with at Growth. But it seemed like the starter folks, there were a lot of first time attendees and they were kind of newbies. So not just to their business, but to MicroConf in general. So I think some people were kind of shy and they were kind of standing on the fringes and they were afraid to jump into larger groups. So I tried doing that a couple of times, just jumping in and talking to people, you know, and sometimes they were okay with it. And, you know, sometimes the conversations just kind of died on the vine and, you know, that happens. And so you move on. But, you know, the vibe was a little bit different from the standpoint of the people who had been there. And we had actually been told by Rob and Mike, okay, tonight star folks are coming. Definitely try to engage them in conversation. And, you know, this is some of their first times at MicroConf. So be welcoming to them in the community. And, you know, I was not the only one that was trying to do that out there. I saw lots of other people at Growth do that as well. But I think as a first timer to MicroConf, you know, it's kind of intimidating. You see people there that maybe you've been listening to podcasts, you know, authoritative podcasts far more than ours, right? Like right. If you met Stelly or Heaton at MicroConf, you might be totally intimidated because all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, that's Stelly Efti. He runs Close.io.
Holy shit, God, that's Dave Rodenbaugh.
Nobody. Okay. Let's file this under phrases nobody has ever uttered in their entire life. Holy shit, there's Dave Rodenbaugh. He's that guy on Rogue Startups. Like, this has never been said, and I doubt it ever will be said.
Yeah.
But, you know, meeting Rob and Mike for the first time, if you've been listening to Startups for the rest of us, they're probably a little bit intimidated, not realizing just how approachable these guys are. Or if you have been reading a lot of Brennan Dunn's content online, and then all of a sudden you're like, hey, there's Brennan Dunn in the crowd. Holy shit, there's Brennan Dunn. You know, that can be pretty intimidating until you realize that the community is all about engagement and approachability and just having discussions. And it's not – you know, there's not a personality. It's not about ego. It's not about, you know, I don't want to talk to you. It's like we go to this conference specifically to have conversations with people that we don't know so that we can make new relationships and learn things. So, you know, if you kind of held back at MicroConf Starter and felt like, gosh, you know, I didn't get the stuff out of it. You know, next year, make it your plan to just go up every night and say, I'm going to talk to 10 people I have never met before.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who they are. Just go up and introduce yourself and then start having a conversation. Everybody's badge has a little thing on it that says, ask me about blank. And then people wrote in whatever. So I put in e-commerce/WordPress. And, you know, some people asked me about that, some people didn't. But if you have no idea what to start a conversation with on somebody, just look at their badge, you know, and if you walk up and their badge is backwards or whatever, you know, people flip my badge around to figure out who the heck I was or see what they should ask
right.
me about.
Right.
And that's fine. I'm not intimidated by that. But that's, you know, that's the way you start a conversation. And, you know, maybe 8 of those people are not people that you have much in common with, or maybe you aren't interested in that specific business. But so what? You've got 2 people that you might run into that could be totally amazing. You start a relationship off, and then 6 years later, you're going back to MicroConf and you're having great conversations with them in depth. Maybe you're joining a mastermind with them. Maybe you're buying or selling the business with them. Who knows? You know, that's how this stuff happens. That's where the connections are made.
Yeah, I remember a couple of times at MicroConf last year, and just at conferences in general, you've known of somebody or you've talked to them online. You go up and you meet them. Holy shit, it's Chris or it's Rob or whoever. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting you in person. Yeah, I think especially in this business where it's like the online thing where we don't see people very often we consider our colleagues. It's great and kind of surprising sometimes what somebody's really like. I was surprised last year to see that so many people who seem really outgoing and what we read and what we hear on a podcast are really not. And I'm probably one of those people. I'm not a real extroverted person, especially in big groups. I think that's a bit of a tough thing with something like MicroConf is you have a bunch of left brain introverts at a conference together. And it's funny to see some of the people come out of their shell and some people kind of go the other way who normally see sort of, you know, outward. Just sit back and observe, I think. So
yeah. Brennan Dunn made the same observation. So he was doing a write-up and talking about, you know, why you should go to conferences and stuff. And he listed out a handful of conferences that he really likes, MicroConf, of course, being one of them because he's been there for years. But one of the things that he lists as his, you know, things to look for in a good conference is introvert friendly. Mm-hmm. And he still considers MicroConf to be introvert friendly because you can basically engage as much or as little as you want. And he considers himself an introvert, even though if you look at his messaging online, it feels like he's a very outgoing sort of guy, but he's not. And when you talk to him in person, you know, he's very soft spoken, but very intelligent. And, you know, like any introvert, after a while, you're sort of like, you might get to a point where, you know, they don't want to engage in small talk and you don't want to engage in small talk. And you're like, okay, well, great. We'll see you later. And that's okay. You know, yeah. I had plenty of conversations like that. And I realized that I am more of an ambivert. So, you know, my extroverted tendencies can come out in these crowds. But after a while, I feel social fatigue, you know, and I need to just kind of withdraw and do my thing.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And if, you know, it's hard for you as an introvert to interact with that crowd, then you got to, you know, force yourself to step it up just a little bit, maybe not a ton, but more than you might be comfortable with, because you might find that relationship with one other person that is going to drive your business forward, or somebody that is going to become like the referral hub, or somebody who could be your mentor or whatever. But, you know, if you don't talk to anybody, you don't get anything out of it. So you definitely have to put a little bit of work into it. So
you know what I found at this point is I need a little bit of time in the middle of the day just to reset and kind of charge my emotional batteries, because it is sort of emotionally draining for me to be kind of on and around new people, especially a lot. So like in the middle of the day or early afternoon, I need to go just fuck around online, read Medium or do whatever, go for a walk by myself. And then it gives me the rest of the day, because if I try to power through, then like 9 o'clock at night, I'm just like, I'm done. I just want to go back and watch SportsCenter and like do nothing. So yeah. So that might be a tip for folks who are getting ready to go to another conference or whatever, that like, if you think that might be it, definitely be intentional and take that time so that you can get, because by far the best stuff happens after dinner, like when you're at the craps table or out for a beer or whatever, people let their guard down, and that's when the real conversation happens, and you got to be there and sort of emotionally available for it, I think.
Yeah, and I think you know, a lot of the times there's just like these spontaneous things where people are like, hey, let's go over to the MGM and play poker, or screw it, let's go walk down the strip, or let's go to In-N-Out Burger or whatever. And, you know, if you don't have the energy to do that, like I remember first couple of microcomps, I missed a couple of opportunities to like hang out with some really cool people that were totally engaged and energized and they were ready to go. And it was like 11 o'clock at night and I had sort of exhausted my social capital for the day. And I was like, nah, I'm going upstairs, I'm going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not ready for that, you can definitely miss out on those things.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was definitely me the last evening of last year. And I kicked myself for it because you don't have a ton of those chances. So interesting. So, all right. Well, I got to ask specifically then, what is like the thing you took away from MicroConf where you're like, I'm going to go home and do this tomorrow or over the weekend, like your aha kind of moment?
So there was one aha moment. I mean, there were lots of little things that I wrote down. So I have 9 bullet points on a list that I took for recapture when I was done, which I'm not going to share, of course, not in great detail at this point. So there's some very the general stuff in there. But one of the things that I learned, and this was from Russ Hennebrand, I think. Let's see. Hennebery. Russ Hennebery. And he basically gave a content marketing framework where he talks about what the various aspects of the funnel are, how they apply to your business, and what is the intent at each level of that funnel.
Hmm.
And what he gave to me in that talk was not specifically like set of new ideas about like you have to content market or, you know, you've got to send autoresponders or, you know, those are all tactical things. He gave me a very strategic framework on how this stuff all hangs together in a very consistent sort of way. And he also talked about like where your biggest wins are going to be. Everybody thinks that content marketing is about shoving more people in the top of the funnel. But he talked about content marketing, how it really impacts every level of the funnel. So for example, like bottom of the funnel and post part of the funnel, your documentation is a content marketing asset. And if you're not putting that forward in a way that, you know, helps users answer their questions, you're missing out on a chance to keep them as customers or to convert them into a paid trial, depending on which side of the funnel that you're on.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I never really sat down and thought about documentation as a content marketing asset. Documentation is documentation. That's just something you do for the users, right? But the way Russ couched this was you make this stuff to either convince people to buy because it answers specific objections that they have right before they convert, or it answers specific questions that they have right before they churn, because they might be like, how do I put your SaaS in a different language? And if you don't have that in your documentation, maybe they're not going to sign up for your tool because they don't think that your tool meets their needs.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're having a problem with setting up a payment gateway afterwards and you don't have that in your documentation and they can't make that happen, they might be frustrated enough where they just outright churn without talking to you. So that was sort of like the big aha light bulb moment for me, was how content marketing affects people's intent at every level of the funnel. And that you should, if you're going to optimize anything, you optimize the bottom first and work your way up. Because if you can't convert them at the bottom, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah, I think that what the digital marketer guys talk about, like awareness, intent, or awareness, decision, and intent, or something like that. It's kind of what you're talking about, is the top and the middle and the bottom.
That's exactly it. Yes, the intention at each level is very different. The awareness is at the top. I forget what the middle one was. And then the bottom one is like decision. The bottom one is the very bottom one afterwards is churn. You're concerned about churn.
Right.
So without like, you know, reiterating Russ's whole talk, that clicked a lot of things in for me. So he was talking about it in terms of aware, evaluate, convert, and commit.
Okay.
So that was his 4 levels. And then he gave you statistics of how you figure out how those various levels are working very well. And then he talks about what kind of content you want to generate at those various levels. And so for me, that was revelatory because I've not read something specific on this. Maybe it's not revelatory to you because you've known this for ages, but this is one of those things that I had bits and pieces of it, but he kind of put it all together into one big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand the concept, whether I've been able to do it successfully or not, I think is probably no. I think I still have a lot to learn there, because the fact is it's easy to talk about that stuff, I think, but it's really hard to, and this was my goal for MicroConf last year. So the fact that I'm still talking about it means that I don't fully understand how to do it. But it's tough to say, like, okay, let's get a marketing plan. And the marketing plan is, how do you provide content and attract people for the top, the middle, and the bottom of your funnel? And how do you write different content for each of those types of people or that phase of their journey? Yeah, I think it's really hard, and it takes knowing what you're doing really well, like you're talking about with learning e-commerce, as well as you can, to understand those pains at the different points of people's journey. But I think that, yeah, that was my goal going into MicroConf last year, and it still is something that I think I'll always probably be working on, because it's just tough. It's just tough to conceptually say, okay, I'm going to write a blog post. Who is it for, and what purpose does it serve, and what kind of business purpose objective am I trying to fulfill out of it? A lot of times we just say, I'm going to write a blog post about podcast microphones, and let's just fucking do it. That's really kind of sorry.
That's a spray and pray approach, and that's what he was saying, that just doesn't work. Yeah. And yeah. He actually – see, you missed out, because he gave a document, a Google sheet that says, here are the different levels of intention. Here are the content, then you can come down and list what are the things of content I'm going to write for each of those. And he was talking about at the top of the funnel, you don't want a million articles. You want one or two that are knocking it out of the park. And then you drive paid traffic to them, mm-hmm. or you drive all of your keyword traffic to them, so that you're getting highly focused traffic that solves that specific problem. So, yeah. It was good stuff. That was probably my best one. I mean, there were great things to take away from every talk. You know, Sherry's talk kind of hit me in the feels about why I'm doing, what I'm doing, and what's my motivation, and where am I coming from, and what is it that I want to be, and where do I make my decisions from, and stuff like that. And Rob's talked a lot about those same motivations, and it actually helped me evaluate a very tough decision that was presented to me freelancing-wise recently, and I sat down and talked with my wife, and it turned out to be not a tough decision at all, because all I had to do was just sort of go through what are my – must-haves here. What is it that motivates me? What are my deal breakers? And as soon as we went through that, it was like, nope, there's a bunch of deal breakers in the list. Okay, done. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So super easy.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I think, man, the world we live in, especially sort of like online business, everything is so readily available that, yeah, the consulting gig or the starting the new side project or whatever is so easy, and the barrier to entry is lower and lower all the time, that knowing what's important to you and being disciplined about that, it is tough, but really important, I think. I feel like I've gotten better about that recently in the last 6 months, probably. But damn, it's still really hard. Yeah, it's still really hard. And I think, especially for folks just starting, it's probably the thing that gets most people. And keeps them from being successful is they are not as intentional as they could or should be, and disciplined with not getting into the shiny object or taking on the thing that's not going to fulfill their bigger purpose, quitting the job and running a whatever. Yeah, I think but it's tough to say no when something that looks like a great opportunity is presented to you.
The power of saying no is probably the greatest power that you'll have as an entrepreneur. And it's a power I've not wielded nearly enough.
Yeah.
And it was only when I took on Recapture that I finally was just to the breaking point of so many things that were like languishing projects that were still hanging around. So I still had that stupid college registration thing that basically had broken even at best, and was barely covering its server bills over the year. I still had that thing running, let's say a month before MicroConf.
Yeah.
And I finally got the renewal from Google saying, hey, your G Suite, dumbest name ever, your G Suite thing is coming up for renewal for Schedule Watcher. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Yeah. I can't be focused on that, not even for a minute. So I just went that day. I canceled the subscription. I shut down the AWS instances. The subscription cancellation just processed like yesterday because they won't do it for a month. And, you know, the minute I was done with that, I had like a brief second of terror, like, oh, my God, what did I just do? Because when I shut that down, like I didn't keep backups. I didn't, you know, it was done. When I shut that down, it was all gone, all of it.
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, I just felt like this huge weight had been lifted off my shoulders. So, and like when I hired for support, I'd been holding on to that for so long. And now that Bobby is doing that, I'm like, ah, oh, feels so much better. I don't have to do the support anymore. You know, she's doing a great job. She's handling that. Like this MicroConf was the least stressful for me in terms of support that I've ever had going to any MicroConf. Cause I've always had, the plugin businesses, except for maybe the first one or two MicroConfs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, first one, 2012. I had solidly had them. I think I had them a little bit in 2011, but it was not quite enough to be that substantial yet. Anyway, you know, just saying no and getting things off your plate so that you can be more focused is huge. It's huge.
Yeah, emotional bandwidth is what I call it. Just if you have too many irons in the fire, your brain literally is split three or four or five different ways. And even if one of them, like your college registration site or whatever, is just on the back burner, you're thinking about it and they're like that guilty conscience of, oh, I took the time or I spent the money to do this and now it's just fucking sitting there. I'm a huge fan of killing the things that aren't really doing it. And I mean, yeah, I've taken some, I don't want to talk about it too much, but I've taken some steps to be more intentional recently. And I think in the short term, it could kind of hurt things, but in the long term, really help things. And I'm fine with that. I can take the short term hit for the long term gain. And I think that's probably the toughest thing that I've seen. It's like, you know, something's not working. You got to shoot it in the head and go do something else. And if it sets you back, you know, a percentage of revenue or a percentage of time or amount of time, that's fine, because otherwise you're going to find yourself 2 years later still doing the thing that you don't like, unless you're able to kind of draw the line and say, okay, this is not something I want to keep doing forever. This is not the business I want to run, or this is not the product I want to sell. I'm going to go do the other thing. And if it sets you back a little bit, that's fine. Cause in the long run, I think it's a shame for us to choose to do this with our lives and kind of live this kind of business and this lifestyle that we live without being like 100% happy with what we're doing. That's like the biggest shame to me, is like, oh, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I own my time and I live wherever I want and I can work whenever I want, but I don't like what I do. That's like, you're so close to having it all. And then the one thing you can really change is like, you don't like your business, just stop doing it and do something else, you know?
True. Very true. Yes.
Harder to do than to say, but I think,
especially when you're chasing after things all the time and you think, gosh, the side project, it might be worth something, or you're like me and processing $5 refunds for stupid college registration stuff. You're like, oh my God, shoot me now.
Yeah.
When I processed my last one in February, that's when I was like, this is stupid. Why am I still doing this?
Yeah.
If you get to that moment, you know, I think Amy Hoy calls it the fuck it moment. You know, you need to evaluate and get rid of it. So
yeah, for sure.
If it's not working, yeah.
Well, man, I have to say I'm jealous of going to MicroConf. I have two conferences coming up and potentially a third still this year. So I have my WordCamp Europe in Paris in June, SaaSDoc in September in Dublin, and then potentially MicroConf Europe, which sounds like it'll be later in the year. Still sort of to be determined, but I feel like I'm just getting good at conferences now, so it'll be fun to get a chance to go to some of those.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear about WordCamp Europe and what was the other one? SaaSDoc, you said?
SaaSDoc, yeah, like Woodstock, but SaaSDoc, yeah.
Oh, SaaSDoc. Okay. It sounded like SaaS Doc, like you were documenting SaaS or something.
No.
SaaS Doc. Okay, SaaS Doc. So I'll be interested to see how those go, both of them. I think they'll be very different based on other WordCamps that I've heard other people talk about in the community. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of people you meet there, what kind of conversations you have. So.
Yeah, and I think the SaaS one sounds like Saster. Like there's definitely, they have tickets for investors. So it'll be a very sort of like venture funded friendly conference, which is very different than MicroConf. You know, everyone there's not everyone. Most of the people there are bootstrapped, and I would suppose that this one, very few people relatively will be. So, but I think it's okay. You know, like I'm sort of excited about seeing the difference there. Cause it's healthy just to sort of recognize the difference, even if it's not the path you want to go down.
The goldfish swimming among the piranha.
Yeah, for sure.
I've just had too many bad experiences with venture-funded stuff to want to go down that route anymore. It's just not for me.
No, I don't think it's for me. I don't want the stress. I think it would be immensely stressful.
Yeah, that and other things, I think. The stress would be one of it, but the political backstabbing that comes with it and wondering whether you're investors/board are conspiring against you, which I've seen several times, or the founder gets shut out, or you get diluted so you no longer have control over the company, or the whole thing craters because of power struggles, or those are all personal experiences I've had with one or more startups I've been involved with. The names will not be named at this point to protect the guilty, but
nice. All right, man. Well, sounds like the conference was a success. That's great. I'm glad for you and for Rob and Mike and everybody that went. It sounds like MicroConf was yet again a wonderful time.
It was indeed. And if there's something that you out there in the audience wanted to contribute about your experience at MicroConf or things that you really enjoyed or particular highlights that we missed, why don't you drop us an email at podcast@roguestartups.com. We'd love to hear from you. And thanks again for everybody who is listening out there. If you have a chance, drop us a review in iTunes, and there's going to be a link at the bottom of the show notes to do that. We really appreciate that. It helps expose us to other people that might be folks that would want to come to MicroConf and have chats with you. So take care, and we'll talk to you all next week.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.